Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 28th on the West Coast, now June the 29th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. For those of you on the West Coast, this is the last Monday of the month of June, in case you haven't noticed, and East and Central and Mountain Time is going to be the last Tuesday, very shortly for some of you. This is a very special time of the week because I bring a fellow researcher, author, journalist, and also fellow talk show host as my co-host on Evident Footprints. He hosts his own show called The Story Behind the Story, now heard on the Micro Effect Network. And Monday through Friday. In fact, he has just an hour break before he comes on this show. And I'm very pleased to have back to talk about the Gulf situation and other important matters, my good friend, Dr. A. Truat. True, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Don. Since we talked last, as you know, there's been a lot of new twists and turns to this whole thing. And I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of conjecture because, frankly, the only thing that we can trust is BP. And how in the world can a company come in, do the massive contamination, be able to dictate who gets what news stories, you know, covering? They have their own little Gestapo, you know, police going on there to keep journalists from seeing what they're not supposed to. And now the latest, they're building a city there, for heaven's sakes, and on American soil. Who's running this show? You know, is the British really still, you know, owning us as vassals and slaves? It would appear so.
Well, so according to I was going to say, according to the Virginia and the New England Accords many years ago. That's exactly what's happening. The Virginia Company has been basically taking 50% of all the mineral rights of our country. And a lot of people aren't aware of that. And that's how they put the railroads together. That's how basically they brought the law of the sea to the land. And, boy, we could go off on a whole different topic on that, but...
Well, yeah, you know, since we talked last, I was on Drew Malone Raines' show on Wednesday, but prior to that, on Wednesday morning, you know, there was the dark specter, of course. The solstice is always, it's a black, high black Sabbath day where a lot of children are sacrificed worldwide. That's the Letha, the holiday, and talking to some of these so-called chosen ones, as you know, Don, it's very traumatic because they've seen and participated in this. It's not some figment of anybody's imagination. This really happens. People click their tongues and say that's just not possible. Well, the children aren't taken from upscale, you know, suburban America, ladies and gentlemen. These are low-income children that oftentimes go missing, and or their parents are so desperate they sell the children for the rituals. And there's a group in the country called the Finders. Ted Gunderson has put together a pretty conclusive dossier on this group, and that's part of his ongoing investigation for the last 20-plus years. And they do nothing but target, you know, children for these rituals. So Monday night was kind of, you know, knowing what went on that night, and that we did the show, and then Tuesday, of course, I was getting feedback on the Kali Yuga paper, which is the dark Hindu for the dark times, and putting it out to some of my circle of influence. I got some feedback on that. One gentleman in particular who's extremely well connected in some very high levels of government and in just the scientific community. I would, it's a very good bet. He's an ultimate insider. And as he's prone to do in his teaching way, he doesn't come out and lecture you. He just chides you and says, "You're not doing your homework, Dr. Odd. You're too quick to jump on the bandwagon and not step outside the box." And I must admit, I had to step back and say, "Yeah, well, what else can you do when that's all that you're hearing?" You see. And he basically said, "You need to study the specific gravity of hydrocarbons at 5,000 feet, and you'll see something if you do your homework correctly. And here's some people you can talk to if you have questions. You'll see the whole new picture." And I just never thought about it. 5,000 feet deep. First thing, of course, you had to find out the total amount of pressure per square inch. The tons of water pressure exudes an amazing 2,500 pounds per square inch on anything down there. And so you've got that factor. You've also got no light. It's so dark that it's just much of the time it's freezing. And so you got this anomaly. What happens to a hydrocarbon or any gas for that matter at 5,000 feet? Well, even the most highly pressurized oxygen tank, if you were to do an experiment, you couldn't get the tank down to 5,000 feet before it implodes. Okay, the gases just react a whole lot differently at that depth and pressure. And so,
yeah, well, if I can add something here, the very statement that you have to know what the characteristics are at 5,000 feet. It's not like that's done every day. I mean, how much data is there on that? Anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's only you can count on one hand the number of vehicles, submersibles that have explored that deep. And one of them, mapped out the cavernous depths there of that region of the Gulf. And much of it was reported in a series of news magazines in 2005, 2006. And when you realize that, we talked about this, I believe, on the air, that they, about 20-some-odd miles from the deep water drill area, there was reported a vent spewing out a whole, ungodly amount of oil. And that was shown, or talked about. And of course, then the specter of this huge methane bubble. Okay, you got that Richard Hoagland on Coast to Coast who came on and explained what's going on there. Is that a false statement? I don't believe so. I think it's absolutely correct. There is this gas bubble, but I maintain it's always been there. It's not the result of any broken drill bit. It just seems like, Don, that the powers that be want the American people to be caught up in wild fear for whatever reason. It just kind of keeps their recessions, spending habits going the way they prescribe. The banking system's hurting them, housing market. Because nobody, people lost confidence. They don't spend. My mineral business is really hurting. It's never been this bad in 15 years. It's just nobody's buying anything, and we've got a very basic product. and we've built very successfully, and it's just not happening for us anymore. And, it, and it's not just me, it's just the economy. People, no matter what you do, they're afraid to spend money.
Mm-hmm. The fact that that there may or may not be this bubble, or this bubble might be just a public relations gaffe for maybe a continental shift that's going on. There has been great speculation in the metaphysical arena for a number of years that Atlantis was going to reappear. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily where Atlantis is, but what do we know about what's underneath and what might take place geologically? There's a similar phenomenon going on near Australia, where they're saying there's a shift of the land and the seabed rising at a rate of 13 feet per day.
Yeah, and that has nothing to do with deep sea drilling. I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah, but you're right. There's something going on there.
yeah.
So is it that this event has been staged for the financial gain, because something inevitably is going to happen anyway? I mean, you know, we're thinking outside the box a bit here.
Well, we're talking about a group of Satanists here on the ultimate highest level. That's who they are. Let's be very clear here. They're, you know, the Lord John Brown, if you look at and do your research and homework, as I have done, you find that he was forced to step down as BP CEO because of a homosexual lover's triangle, okay? His longtime lover was found and made allegations he was having a fling with a 27-year-old buff bopper, okay? And Sean Chevalier, and he, under oath at the House of Commons, on testimony of what was going on, they caught him in an act of perjury, a la Lewinsky and Clinton, okay? And so, yeah, he was forced to step down because of that, and you've got that type of mentality in there that are the same type as, you know, the pedophile priests, basically. They're, you know, it goes back into my interviews on my show with individuals and authors who's really studied the mindset of the homosexual. And they're, you know, it's not that we're homophobes, or that it's just the fact of the matter is it's that there is a mindset of darkness with, you know, I can't, it's not a blanket statement to say all homosexuals are that way, but the vast majority is. You've got your mass murderers, you know, these Berkowitz and the Son of Sam, others, Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, even the Columbine boys were having these homosexual fantasies and we're acting on them. And I think it, you know, it goes back to, you know, a demonic structure with that. It's the Thule society of Adolf Hitler, Don. It's if you read the Pink Swastika with Dr. Scott Lively and Mr. Abrams, you find that was so very pervasive through the Third Reich and Nazi Germany. So that same theme carries on after the conclusion of World War II. The Thule Society and the Nazis, as we've said so many times, really didn't disappear and die when Berlin fell. They just went more heavily cloaked underground. And the ties to the Vatican, is my guest tonight, Peter Chernoff, has explained so well, go very, very deep in the Jesuits and all of that into Freemasonry. The web is quite complex. So when we look at what's happening here with BP and their attack on the people of the earth, the people specifically of the Gulf states, you have to, you know that it's not so much even a money proposition, but a step towards the very dark agenda to cull the population of the earth, to bring the population down to 500 million as their target. And so we see these very bizarre acts as if they're being revealed or directions given to them by these dark forces. That's what I see happening here with this. I think there is an entity, whether it's interdimensional or spiritual, which is much the same thing, directing the affairs of these sick people.
Yes. In fact, I mentioned to you in an email, and we tend to overlook these things, but BP actually notified the White House on February 13th that there was an oil and a gas leak on this Deepwater Horizon pipeline.
Now, do you have copies of that?
I have an article that goes into the detail. Yes, in fact, it resulted in the resignation of Ken Salazar. Now, in other words, he took the blame for an act that he may not have had anything to do with. But
so let me get this straight: it was leaking back in February. At what size of a leak? I mean, does it specify?
They didn't specify, but that it was of concern. And the White House was notified on February the 13th of 2010. Now, that date is significant. That's the 44th day of the year. Does the number 44 ring a bell?
Well, that comes out to the symbol 8.
That's also the number of the president.
Oh, yeah.
And the remaining days of the year after that are 321, except for leap year, 322, which is the number of skull and bones. Also, the 321 adds up to a 6. Mm-hmm. February 13th adds up to a 6 times 3, or 666. So they picked these dates. That's the date they told them. That's not necessarily the date that the leak began, but they put their numerological stamp on these things, or their numerological seal, and formally announce these things on certain dates because they're following very specific timelines, as you pointed out with the recent summer solstice. That is significant information right there. That gave them roughly two months and an extra week to prepare for this whole thing. So, and you know, from the put options to how they were going to blow this thing up, it's obvious, it's intentional. There's video evidence of that. As much as they don't like to say it, we're just telling the truth. And anyone who's seen the YouTube video knows that it's quite anomalous. That you can see the beams shooting down, and they're not camera anomalies. Just like the video that you included in your recent piece about BP and Beyond Ponzi. I like calling it Beyond Ponzi.
Yep.
Actually. That door opening behind the shot of a now totally erect 90-degree well casing, I mean, it's preposterous, that shot. And it looks like it's in a controlled tank.
Yep.
And you see a door open, you see a person wearing white clothes with something wrapped around their waist. At first it looked like a belt, later on it looks like an apron. And it appears to be a dog going out at about knee level to the person standing at the door. I mean, now they have doors down there at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. It's ridiculous. And this was shown on CNN.
Well, people, I don't think people realize just how powerful that environment is down at 5,000 feet, if that's even where, how deep it really is. We're having to take a lot of things for the, you know, at BP's word. There's no way to independently verify this that I know of. You know, the one fellow called into my show asking, did this drill go down 20,000 feet and go into this reservoir, wall of oil? Well, so says BP. You know, so you know, they put up these videos, like you said, that are just some completely bogus. At that depth, I don't know how they could keep a camera running. The deep water rigs, you know, they can only work 2 or 2 hours at a time, they say, because they, you know, the pressure is even too much for them. They got to come back and recharge whatever they do. And so here, but here they have the 24-hour cameras going. It must be some pretty doggone powerful cameras.
Well,
and at that depth, you couldn't even see him anyway.
Yeah, we had the story that the robot, they had two robots down there. One of the robots accidentally damaged the new seal that they put on the cover they put on the wellhead. Well, yeah. The wellhead they're showing on the CNN video is facing 90 degrees. Straight up, perpendicular to the surface of the Earth. Now, and that's the one we're saying is in a tank. That's the one that has a door opening, not once, but twice, in the background, from behind the plume. And when I saw that plume, I thought, and this was a couple of weeks ago. I'm not speaking about the video that's posted on YouTube. I'm speaking about what I saw on CNN. They were showing this around the clock, these tricolors coming out, yellow and sort of a reddish color, and then there was something that looked like it was on the dark gray or black side in at the rear, and it was coming out of a pipe that was angled similar to the original images they showed us. Now, do we really know any of the images are from the Gulf of Mexico? Do we really know that? You know, it's sort of like on 9/11, all the different planes. In fact, I was on Drew Rain's show today myself, and I made that comparison. I said, we're being shown images, and if you forget the first images that we saw, that that wellhead had a short piece of pipe, a couple of feet sticking out, and it looked like it was chewed off by a steam shovel. It was very erratic and fractured and jagged on the edge. And it was obvious that that thing had exploded off of there. But this had a nice, smooth fitting. It was all lit up. The water was blue. The wellhead is gleaming this bright golden yellow color. And you're seeing not what appears to be 20,000 pounds or 70,000 pounds or 100,000 pounds of pressure, but just this slow little dribble of dispersant, or what appears to be Corex at 9,500 coming up out of that thing. So it looked like it was in a controlled environment. And certainly, even at the end of the video that's posted on YouTube, there's some kind of object that looks like it has two headlights, and then all of a sudden they sort of split. One on the right side is lower than the one on the left side, and this thing looks like two military vehicles. And that's seen inside the tank, in the corner, or from behind the tank. This could be something that's going on outside through a window that you're seeing. Say at night, for example. And they intentionally darkened this room, put some spotlights on the well casing, and then you see the door open. And the girl who's narrating it really calls the shots. She says, now this is the strangest thing I've seen. And she shows the picture of the original wellhead. And of course, everything is black and dark. And you don't really know if you're at the bottom of the ocean or just in a dark room with a tank in it, but it's distinctly different, and that wellhead is slightly raised a few degrees from parallel to the ocean's bottom, just a few degrees, not much, not more than 10, we'll say, and so you have this great disparity between these two shots. Wait a minute now, you know, this is that Building 7 that we're looking at now, this new well casing? Or is that casing number 7?
Well, then the latest I heard also, they say there's 3 wells that are leaking. You've heard that too. Well, the story just keeps changing.
Yeah, yeah. I reported that two almost 3 weeks ago, actually, that there were more reports of more leaks, and then I was saying that my sources tell me there were at least 32 fractures in the ocean floor. 32 distinct fractures that can be seen and measured and located, and they're at the tip.
Yeah, see, that's NOAA study done by this German ship that came in and mapped that back in 2005, 2006. That's what really got my blood pumping when I read that report, and they you know, had said there's these vents that are just massive. You know, releasers and gushers of asphalt and crude oil and methane. Well, hello. What is BP even doing drilling into that stuff? I mean, it's abiotic, meaning that it's manufactured by the Earth's deep core, you know, processes. It's a absolutely a renewable resource. There's no such thing as peak oil and finite scarcity, just not reality.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Scientist Jim Murray agrees with you as well. So the 32 fractures are basically at the end of the New Madrid Fault, which moves up north and along the Mississippi River, basically, and up to Canada. So,
well, you know, we need to just, again, I've talked to three scientists that I know very, very well. They've always been right on. You know, their logarithmal formulas about the specific gravity of, you know, any type of crude, no matter what it is, it's going to range a little bit from 0.82 specific gravity to 0.85. Now, that's on a basis of 1.0 being the standard of water. So a 0.85 specific gravity at sea level just means that it will rise to the top of the surface tension of the water. Now, you got to ask yourself then, the hypothesis is, well, that 5,000 feet at 150 atmospheres deep with 2,500 pounds of pressure, what would 100,000 psi pipe do in that environment? Well, as anybody knows, you have two forces hitting each other. That 100,000 foot, you know, stream, 100,000 psi stream, no matter if it's 5 feet in circumference, is going to have to give way to that constant 2,500 pounds of pressure going, you know, 2,500 feet. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It just can't, you know, it's just like trying to motor a vehicle through thicker and thicker mud. You know, at some point, the mud wins. What's happening here, and the logarithmal formulas of any hydrocarbon or gas at that, it immediately, it's like a cracking stage. Hydrocarbons are so named because there's carbon, which is plant or, you know, vegetation based, and hydrogen ions. And at that pressure, they're just like a cracker. I mean, it's going to break those down, and they're going to go to the floor of the ocean. And that's what gets me, Don, is here are these studies checking out this foreign alien terrain at the depth of the Gulf, and they, you know, the sediment that's down there is just is as black as the darkest night. It's all part of nature. So he's saying something that just doesn't add up. The whole story. They want you to believe that this thing is spewing out relentless amounts of oil, and that it just almost within, you know, hours, if not minutes, it's suddenly floating on the surface of the water, and people aren't logically thinking this through.
Mm-hmm. In following the theorem of your story, and I say theorem because we don't have all the facts, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody does. To tell you the truth, they're certainly not attempting to stop this thing. It's getting worse, despite the media blitz to lead us down a different path, which is normally called propaganda. Do you think that by any chance the activities going on in the Gulf might include, in light of the fact that they're not allowing any air traffic over the area, that they may be intentionally dumping oil?
That's always a possibility, given, you know, who knows what the truth is. One of the things that has never made sense, and this gentleman has got an ongoing debate with him, and I shared with you what his postulation is. He won't ever address the issue, what is really happening at 5,000 feet as far as the thermodynamics. And he won't address science, which is the whole hinge on what this door opens and closes, no pun intended, you know, and BP's tanks. But, it just beggars the question, if this doesn't hold, you know, science at 5,000 feet, it's like asking us to believe that a fire collapsed the World Trade Centers. It's the same ludicrous theory to me. So where is all this oil coming from?
Now, who manufactures a camera that can withstand the pressures?
I've asked too. I said, there's just no such thing. You've got a remote control deal, but you're not going to be able to keep that pressurized and fighting that, you know, on a 24/7 camera basis. That's ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
That's
now,
ludicrous.
So in other words, then we can assume on the basis of the fraudulent well casing that the Senate—that's the Senate TV camera, by the way—that's viewing this wellhead that I described earlier. That's basically just perpendicular to the Earth's flat surface. It's pointing up toward the sky, in other words. And it seems to have repaired itself a little bit. It's dressed itself up. It looks neater, you know? Well, of course it does, because it's not the same wellhead casing.
You have
to presume that we've never really seen the actual damage that's down.
And then you've got to also take into account, you've got the corrupt individuals with the Bureau of Interior and the Mineral Management Corporation services that, you know, you've got how many thousands of capped wells at a much shallower depth that the Minerals Management Service had reported to Obama earlier last year in 2009, that they were concerned that many of these were starting to spring leaks too. And who's to say that you can't get one of those things uncapped and start spewing it out? This is the whole point, Don. There's no reason to restrict air travel in the Gulf. So what if people are curious? And when a fly, you're high enough above the fumes, you would think that it's not going to cause your plane to blow up. You see what I'm saying? And we just to get, you know, evidence and take some video cameras going. Maybe there was earlier some people flying it and taking pictures and starting to look and say, oh my goodness, this doesn't make sense. The coordinates of the BP Deep Horizon is such, and yet look where the flow is going and moving off to.
Mm-hmm. Now, then we have this anomaly of people allegedly picking up tar balls on the beaches, yet they set a 1 or 2 ton tar ball on fire out in the middle of the Gulf.
Mm-hmm. And you look all around the area of the flames, those pictures that have made it, see how wonderfully nice and clean and blue the water is?
Yes.
Did you notice that?
Yes, I did. It's as though they picked that tar ball up, and those tar balls can be manufactured basically as they're collecting them. They have several ways, but they do it on barges primarily. They can basically throw it all in a net, and it takes on a shape. Mm-hmm. And then when they want, they can just lower it into the water like they're doing. It floats. The tar balls float. That's how they make their way to the shore. And they set it on fire. Now,
well,
if that isn't pollution and global warming, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. There's 28 federal government / Coast Guard suction cipher ships, okay, I found this out just today, as you know, Don. They haven't been activated at all. They're still not working to clean this up. You got 14 countries that immediately sent word to their flotillas of the same type of cleanup crews, all prepped and ready to drill, to do this. They've been drilling and training for it, and they've been turned away without even so much as a thank you. And then you have the state of Louisiana wanting Governor Gentile to go. You know, he ordered his the state's cleanup rigs, and they've been shut down, and Coast Guard escorted them back. Now that's a huge, huge red flag. It's either so dastardly bad that it would maybe sink the ships or blow them up, or it's so drastically, over-reported that there's nothing for them to see out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had asked me about this BP notification on the 13th. There's a very interesting article. Actually, there are a few articles. If anyone, any of the listeners, just Googles February 13th, 2010, comma, and then BP, you will come up with several stories alluding to the fact that they knew this on February 13th. You haven't heard much talk about that. And it was evidently determined that this was not important. So you want to talk about somebody dragging their feet. 2 months went by before the announcement was made, and that was on the explosion on Hitler's birthday, April 20th. Actually, the news started coming out on the 21st, because that was, 10 o'clock at night on April 20th. So this was planned, and are you telling me that that's a coincidence that they pulled this off on Hitler's birthday? Oh my goodness! Another 6, by the way. And if you use the same numerological formula they like to use when they get a 6 out of the month and the date, you can multiply and you get 666 out of both events. The announcement on the 13th of February, and the event on April 20th. It's their numerology, not mine.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And so what the, if you've got a false flag, there's got to be a motive behind it, of course. And I've just been crunching some numbers, and ladies and gentlemen, most... most Americans don't have a clue when they talk about cap and trade, what that really entails. Well, it's the most incredible Ponzi scheme that, you know, Charles Ponzi, I'd remind the listeners, is the Italian mafioso organized crime figure that saw a way to make some big money fast by just selling non-existing postal credits, international postal credits. Well, these credits, they're based on an ideal, but it's not real.
That's,
you know, he was promising these huge returns by, you know, he would forgive a form of arbitrage by in a low market selling a high, and he had millions of dollars at play in this scheme.
That was postage stamps. Basically, it was like selling futures on postage stamps that could be given to those in Europe who wanted to send letters to the United States.
Yeah. Well, that's Ponzi's scheme, ladies and gentlemen, is a whole lot more realistic than selling fictitious carbon credits on the world markets. I kid you not, this is what's happening with this cap and trade. You got the Chicago Carbon Exchange, CCX, and the London Carbon Exchange, the LCX. You've got people suddenly making a form of currency, a tradable security, in the form of a blessed carbon credit. What's wrong with this picture? Well, carbon dioxide is not even the harmful gas they're making it out to be. The emperor wears no clothes with this one. He's bare naked. Didn't even have underwear on.
Well, yeah, isn't that like backdating a check?
Well, it's worse than that. It's making it a check out of toilet paper and with no account on it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I use that for an example because that's known to be illegal in certain states, if not all of them.
And that toilet paper has the Lord Brown's marks on it.
And you know, Ponzi was basically the founder of the SEC.
Yeah.
They liked the name so much they kept it after they put him in jail.
So I did some digging as to, you know, the Chicago Carbon Exchange is established by none other than our friends at Goldman Sachs, who actually paid and bought 10% of the Chicago Exchange for $26 million. Let's see. This legislation hasn't even passed yet. They have a structure set up where they can put in, make up these fictitious credits, knowing that, you know, feeling confident in a con game that they're going to be able to ramrod this legislation through. Follow this through, ladies and gentlemen. Cap and trade in America means the government or a quasi-governmental agency appointed by the president will go and arbitrarily and subjectively decide who is a carbon emitter and a polluter and who isn't. And their targets, on the hit list, are your coal plants, your coal-fired generating plants, your electrical hubs, all of these that are not hydro or nuclear or whatever on their good list. Coal emits carbon dioxide, they say, and thus has to be shut down. Unless they have deep pockets and can start paying this exchange carbon credits. Now, that's just the one example in industry. The next phase is the private sector where if you like your Suburban to drive instead of a little Honda Civic or a hybrid Toyota, which will be their standard, you have to buy annual carbon credits to drive those cars. All of this goes to one central clearinghouse in Chicago. It's a mob racket, ladies and gentlemen, in south side of Chicago with Al Capone. And guess who's the Goldman Sachs and the law firm that set up the Chicago Carbon Exchange is the law firm that just happened to hire Michelle Obama. That's what she did. Does this not start to stink like yesterday's garbage?
It stinks like last year's garbage.
I was trying to be nice because last year's garbage got some maggots in it.
Yeah, the ones that survived.
Yeah. I mean, they got a whole colony of maggots, whole families, generations.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you see how it's pretty lonely at the top with these maggot chain, maggot farms.
Well, you know, you're describing how this is laid out. You know, these corporations are going to get carbon credits, but how are they going to get their money back? They're going to get it back by raising the prices they charge us. See, they're going to pass it down to us.
Well, sure. It's the bottom line is the consumer gets the wealth redistributed, and who gets issued credits? Well, your illegal immigrants, your third world countries, they say, are going to be the benefits of this. It's equalizing the map. It's called socialism and redistribution of wealth of the highest order. This is socialism on octane. Okay. That's the first thing, and then look at the money that's collected, less the CCX's huge commissions and Goldman Sachs profit margins, which are all going to be taking a huge cut, probably 25%. The rest of it goes to fund the green wave, the turbine wind generators, the solar powers, ladies and gentlemen, which just happens to be cornered by British Petroleum. Do the math. And the architects of all of this, ladies and gentlemen, the whole architects of the cap and trade to begin with is British Petroleum. This is in my paper, Beyond Ponzi. I don't know if you've got it on your website, but if you don't, you should, and...
I have a copy of it. I haven't had the opportunity to post it yet. I have been busy.
But yeah, but in the meantime, you go to my website, atruot.com, and you can download it. It's called Beyond Ponzi.
Yes, and I did plan to post it there, so it'll be a downloadable document. Now, as you were talking about BP, I was thinking they could take all the corn cobs from the ethanol that they produce, 10%, which goes into the gasoline they make, which is supposed to make it more environmentally friendly, but evidently they have to still put cap and trade on all of this. And it's going to reflect in the gas prices, believe me. It already is.
Well, yeah, the cap and trade will be increased in federal taxes, again on gasoline tax, which will push the tax alone to $4 and $5 a gallon, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I think they should just take all those corn cobs and start stuffing them in the holes they created in the bottom of the ocean.
No, they got to stuff them in Lord Brown's posterior.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
I mean, that'd probably be too good for them. They probably enjoy it too much.
Oh my!
Smile when you say that, Lord Brownie.
Yeah,
I think you have to laugh at it because if you don't, you're going crazy.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. You have to keep some sense of humor here. And the audience is probably cracking up. I can't believe they're saying this. This is a G-rated show.
Well, we haven't said anything wrong.
No, we haven't. And I'm wondering if it's genetically modified corn cobs, by the way.
I don't know. Size matters, I guess. I don't know.
Well, where do you see this going, True? I mean, there's a lot of information out. Dick Cheney seems to like to go into hospitals every time there's a false flag event. You remember he did this after 9/11, and there were a couple of events that occurred where he's made five major trips to the hospital. Of course, some say that he sneaks out the back door and gets in a limousine and takes off. He's been seen doing that whenever he's afraid of getting whacked. And his association with Halliburton and, I mean, this thing stinks to high heaven.
Well, there may be a connection with him and the Knights of the Rituals, because there's been a lot of people that have come forward and Secret Service people have leaked that he's a reptilian shapeshifter. And I don't know, maybe his skin doesn't fit quite right when he comes back to human form and needs to go to the doctor and gets adjustment. I don't know. or maybe he's just too busy going hunting with hunting partners.
Well, for further reference, folks, you could watch the Brandon Corey story. That's a pretty interesting spin.
Yeah, that's interesting because people are saying that's false. Footage, but my sources, oh no, and they're saying it's absolutely real footage. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, people like to debunk it as much. You know, they like to debunk the truth as much as they do the lies. You know, it keeps people wondering.
He definitely had his index finger and pinky chopped off. The hook 'em horn sign, you know, you can no longer do that. The Satanist California greeting.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty interesting images there, too. I mean, you can do a lot with video. They do it in Hollywood, but using a remote camera, basically a button-sized camera on a shirt with a transmitter to the recording device that they used. It's pretty compelling stuff in that movie. So
and you know, when I just moved up to Ogden from Southern Utah in 2003, my phone rang at the office. I was working late and picked it up, and there was a gentleman, said his name was Brandon Corey, and asked me what I knew about reptilian shapeshifting, and I guess he'd heard from somebody that I had done some lectures on that, and that's true. There was some internet traffic going around about things I had posted, again, not what I had personally witnessed, but what others had come to me with stories, even drawings and pictures. This was actually even before David Icke jumped on this bandwagon. This was back in the 80s, late 80s and 90s. Early 90s. And so I basically, you know, I said, I don't know who you are, Mr. Corey, but he told me about his disappearance of his friend, Jude Kemper, who had infiltrated into the Cheney entourage there when they were in California and was trying to get the shapeshift of Cheney on film and camera when the Secret Service agent arrested him, and basically after that, you know, the hidden camera on his vest showed the Secret Service agent getting very angry and attacking him, and his eyes changed into a vertical slit pupil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he looked like he was getting ready to do a Hurricane Katrina commercial.
Yeah,
for
so
USA Freedom Foundation.
The video goes blank at that time, and then Brandon Corey's friend, Jude Kemper, goes missing, goes AWOL, becomes a missing person. And that's the saga of Brandon Corey trying to fight June Kempfer. On the phone, he said, he told me the story. He says, go to your web, go online and check out the, you know, find June Kempfer. And I did that. And then I said, well, that's interesting. Golly, I wouldn't be surprised if Cheney's a shapeshifter, but you have to, you know, go look at what David Icke's doing in his books. He's taken it to the next level. I said, The Matrix, Children of the Matrix and The Greatest Secret will tell you more than, you know, 100 hours of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So I left it with that, and the Brandon Corey story, part of that video footage is where they go into Jude Kemper's abandoned, you know, apartment that's all sealed off as a crime scene, and they find the Children of the Matrix book there with markings and notes in it by Kemper, and the videographer says to Brandon Corey in the show, look, this is what the Mormon from Utah was talking about. So, you know, I swear to you, that's a real life story.
Yeah, you know, the ending shot when Brandon Corey goes into, you remember he talked with this soldier who gave him instructions on how to get in there.
Yeah, the Marine Corps Major. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and who was also murdered, by the way. And, you know, they show in the film, they show him going through the darkness of the underground hallways of that structure, and he comes out on the stage, if you want to call it that, and there's this ritual going on, and you get a pretty spooky shot of who's in there. I mean, that would be a very expensive endeavor to produce that just for the purpose of putting it out on the internet and telling that story.
The Truth Seeker TV show was basically pulled off the air because they were going to show that.
Mm-hmm.
I did verify that too. So.
Mm-hmm. No, it was very credible, I have to say. And there was a sacrifice going on when he made his way out to that back door of what appears to be a stage, and the chanting and just the whole atmosphere, you know, that would be a very expensive Hollywood production to try to pull that off, just to put that on the internet. A lot of people wouldn't invest that kind of money. And the intention, of course, was to put it on TV, but as a documentary. And it's spooky. There's no doubt about it. But afraid we are not.
Well, I don't know. It's getting bizarre, Don. It just keeps going more and more down the rabbit hole. You know, this... you know, the friends of Drew Malone Raines there in the parishes of Louisiana, the old Bayou Boys, as he calls them. Well, it's going to get very ugly when people start dropping dead from this toxicity. When you can't breathe in 1,000 to some reports of 100,000 times the safe limits of benzene and hydrogen sulfide, and expect to not have a brain hemorrhage.
Mm-hmm. I played last, I guess it was Friday, I played the audio portion of Kendra Arneson's speech to the Gulf Emergency Summit, and that was from a couple of weeks ago, and she was, you know, not a professional speaker, but I thought she did very well in describing what happened. And she was describing the amount of devastation that was occurring to marine life. So despite what we're being told, what's happening out there is a totally different situation. You don't get those kinds of numbers of affected marine life, and it's not just not commensurate with the data that's been given out.
Yeah.
And of course, now we know that that's this problem existed over 2 months prior to when this whole thing caught fire and collapsed, and how it was done. We've basically pieced everything together. Now it's a question of determining what the extent of the pollution is in the water and what's being released into the atmosphere. You know, either through evaporation or the churning of the water. And, you know, I've heard people on CNN go out of their way to stress that none of this can get caught up in the rain. Well, benzene can evaporate and kerosene and the various, so can hydrogen sulfide. It can work its way into rainwater. The wind is capable of even doing that if they get hit by a hurricane or a tornado.
Sure.
And they're quite good at manipulating the weather lately, too, as if they're definitely trying to agitate this thing and cause it to spread. You've got massive storm systems sweeping across the country. By the way, I'm 10 for 10 in that department.
Wow.
Disabling them. And I've talked to a number of people across the country who are following the radar maps and are laughing their heads off when they see big sections of storms just disappear in thin air.
Well, the other hazard that if this does happen, even a you know, just a small amount in the maybe 100 part per billion range of Corexit, if the Corexit is vaporized and the benzene into those structures, you could have massive crop contamination and failure that through the Midwest, which would be even more of a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we close out, Dr. Ott, I'm not sure of the numbers, but there have been some very recent reports that people are starting to have respiratory problems in the hundreds who are seeking medical attention. Have you, in the capacity of your field, gotten any reliable information from anyone that's keeping track of what's really going on in the hospitals and clinics?
I have not personally, but as you know, I issued a benzene primer, you know, what to watch for, why it's toxic, and how to detox the liver and the kidneys. There's a specific protocol that's quite simple, really, to help the body dump out those benzene structures. So I'd highly recommend that. If you go to again, my website, atruot.com, you can see the benzene primer piece on Dr. Ott's papers. And, I highly recommend anybody that's concerned. I think this will be something that everybody needs to look at following, because we're all, to some degree or another, have benzene toxicity. We live in a plastic world. The food that so many Americans eat is, you know, it's got petrochemical leaching coming up into the food. So we do have benzene and parts per billion in our systems right now, and we need a detox from that.
That's what keeps me going, actually. No, I'm just kidding. any closing remarks you'd like to make on this topic or tonight's show or...
Just go to my website, www.atrueott.com, O-T-T, and you'll see it right there in the front post, the list of these articles we're talking about. The Beyond Ponzi is there. You can also go to Dr. Ott's papers and get the benzene primer. But all that, it's important that you that people protect themselves. I would do whatever it takes to get a respirator if you're in even anywhere. If you smell the hydrogen sulfide and benzene very strong, and then you don't seem to smell it anymore, it's not because it's not there. It's because it's burned your olfactory nerves in your nose. One of the first things of toxicity is you can't smell it anymore.
Yeah, I understand. The hydrogen sulfide really contributes to that, the loss of smell, too.
Surely.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind the listeners they can hear your show Monday through Fridays on the Micro Effect Network. And you've had some really good shows lately. Yeah, you always do, but you're hitting some hot buttons here. And of course, this is a hot topic that we talked about tonight, merely because there is this concerted effort to hide the truth. And you've been about revealing it, and I want to congratulate you on the work that you've done so far.
Well, same to you, Don. You're just a incredible researcher. I love your work on Eisenhower and the Mutant Ninja birth certificates.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja, yeah. In fact, now that you mentioned that, you reminded me, I was going to let my listeners know that I'm going to appear on another show tomorrow. I'm going to give you the central time. It's from 10 to actually about 10 minutes to midnight on central time on KHEN.org, Melody Hallett's Truth Quest. And we're going to be talking about that very topic.
I'm going to be doing a taping myself, I think on Monday. So say hi to Melody.
Okay.
We're good. Her show runs the same time as mine, so we got to do tapings now.
Yeah. Well, she twisted my arm and asked me to come on and talk about all that research, which I'm really happy to do because she lets me go into all the details. And I tell you, listeners out there, that you are going to see what's happening now mirrored in the research that I did going back to the 1920s all the way up to, say, 1972. You're going to see everything mirrored in that. This is a repeated cycle that we experience in politics and world wars and false flag events and corruption. And I'm proud of the work that I did, but I give the credit to God for giving me the eyes to see it and the brains to understand what's really going on. So maybe I can talk about that on your show sometime, Drew.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you on, Don.
All right.
Okay.
Well, until next week, you be safe. I'll be listening, and hopefully our listeners will tune in to the Micro Effect, although I want them to listen to me tomorrow. So.
Oh, yeah. Take a break from Dr. Ott.
Okay. I wish you a good night and be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good night, Don.
Okay, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's special guest, Dr. A. Truott. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and BlogTalkRadio.com for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Also, Seth Hendrick on the sound at BBS. Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow when my special guest will be Mr. Michael Anthony. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.